Welcome to Vice or Virtue, an Aggie pod, where Aggie fans and Goose fans talk about Aggie jams. We're going to be discussing some recent shows from Friday and Saturday in Ardmore, PA, and Brooklyn, New York. And we've got Ryan Storm here. Ryan, how are you?
I'm phenomenal, Justin. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be making my Aggie podcast debut. I had an absolutely amazing time at these two shows this past weekend, and I can't wait to talk about it. And I knew as soon as I decided I was going down for these shows, I immediately texted you. I was like, can I come on the pod? Like, you know, I'm excited that you're doing this. You know, for those who don't know, Justin and I have been podcasting together about fish for a very long time. He was my first ever guest on my first ever podcast.
Right? Yeah.
You're 3.5 years ago.
Your resume is extensive, always almost there. Of course, very active Goose podcast. Your Storm Sound sort of podcast umbrella. Me and you and Brian Brinkman just did like a 3.5 hour Fish 2023 Best of the Year jams. And then Things of Gold for all the snarky puppy fans out there. You and Megan from Osiris. So you're busy. Thanks for squeezing me in here in Las Vegas. I'm pumped. Let's do it to it. I want to describe these shows, which were fantastic and really like yin and yang. You get the best of both worlds here, deep jams and a party show. But my word to describe these shows would be accomplished. Like, you walk away from these shows if you're Aggie and you're feeling great. You nailed some big, big jams through a party. Everyone came. Everyone had a great time. Could you break these two shows down in one word or just give us your general reactions?
I don't know if I can put it into one word. I wrote around 2,000 words total about both shows. I'd seen Aggie 4 times before this, I think. A couple of festival sets. I was lucky enough to be at the Relic Studio session that was just pressed to vinyl, Fish After Party. But last week in Ardmore was my first Aggie headlining show. And so this was my first time I was experiencing them. And really what blew me away was the jamming. And I think, you know, this gets talked about on this podcast a lot, obviously. But this is the thing that Aggie has over anyone else in the scene, pretty much, is the group improv. And, you know, I had heard, you know, I've been getting recommendations from you and Brian and our friend Neil for a while. And I haven't really started digging in a ton. But over the last couple of weeks, you know, approaching the shows, I was like, okay, I'll listen to a couple of recent things. And that night one of Nectars really blew me away.
So good.
Going into this weekend, I've gone off track of what your question was, but I'm kind of just, you know, my overall thought is just like that the jamming was amazing. And then going from that to the Purim show on Saturday, you know, sold out Brooklyn Bowl, you know, that celebratory vibe. It was just phenomenal. So that's more than one word.
That's all good. I like all those words and really enjoyed your write-ups of both of the Aggie shows, and folks can find those attached to your social media, I'm sure, but worth the time. And we're going to use the audience recordings, which were taped and posted to archive.org by Graham Munda. So shout out to Tapers for making this all happen. How we do it, Ryan, is we just sequentially go through the shows, and if you had a big jam that you think must be discussed and dissected and diagnosed, just let me know. We have done minimal pre-planning, but did anything from set one in Philly jump out at you? Before we do that, though, I guess we should acknowledge RJ had a great pre-show chat with the band.
He did.
I watched the stream live on Nugs as it happened. It was great. You were in the room. How was it?
It was really cool. My first time at the Ardmore Music Hall, which is a really cool room. And I would say, you know, it was probably around half full for the interview, which was really cool.
Wow.
You know, it wasn't a separate ticket. It was, you know, come early. You know, the show was at 8, but if you come at 6:30, you'll get to see RJ interviewed them. Lots of great discussion. You know, some kind of very vague hints about the new album that they've recorded that's coming out later this year. You know, they were talking about what they had planned for Purim the next night. And they did a really cool draft of like, you know, bands that they cover, which Jake handily won that, which was funny. It was very clear very early on that Jake was the winner.
Do you remember who he picked? I was like getting ready to make dinner while I was watching
it was
that.
Jerry Garcia,
okay.
Little Feet, and the Band.
Okay, yeah, that works.
Yeah, which and as I think it was what he said after you know, he won, it was like by applause they gauged. And I think he was like, you know your audience. which is accurate.
Jake is the Megan Gliona of Osiris
draft champion. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, well, set one, I thought it was great. It was fun to watch on the live stream. Could get used to that for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, we had solid versions of Atomic Age, new song that debuted in Burlington a couple nights prior. Northern Lights was great. Way of the Stone, Peaceful Moody Cool Down, Gretchen, throwback to an older song, Skin It Back, was nice. Evergreen was nice. And 12 Pounds of Pain, which I love, was solid. But I think if, when we talk about must discuss highlights for you, are we also jumping into early set two?
I just on the set, it was very, very solid set to me, you know, not a ton of jamming. I immediately loved Atomic Age. Mm-hmm. And I've been listening to that song a bunch over the last few days, obviously the Nectar's version, because that's the only soundboard we have out at this point. And I am not a person who listens to audience recordings unless I absolutely have to.
You'll get there. I tell you what, these Eggy shows, the difference between when the odds have posted and when the soundboards
have
come out.
For
I've been deep in them. They sound good. And yeah, brand new song. And it's the melody that's actually running in the background of my head right now. That's how catchy it is.
Always. Why did he run? It's been all over. But I love, especially in that song, that envelope filter sound that Jake uses, for all those technical gearheads out there, on an envelope filter, I think you can either set the filter to sweep up or down. And I'm pretty sure the up is your usual like Jerry Mutron kind of sound. And down is where you get that kind of effect that he uses there. I think I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure in 2018, Trey had two Mutrons in his rig. One set to up and one set to down. So you hear that sound a lot there.
Oh.
Interesting. But I loved Atomic Age, and I thought the rest of the set was, you know, really solid, had some great flow. Gretchen, I loved. I hadn't heard that song before. Wasn't sure if it was original or a cover. But wow, that song is great.
It's only been played a handful of times, and it is an original. I think it came out in 2016.
Nice.
But yeah, it's really great. Some of their original instrumentals, also Yuck, even though that has a few lyrics, in the same vein where it's like, oh, these guys were writing great tunes 8 years ago or probably even before that when they came together as a band. But as far as the big jams, I mean, they came out after set break and did not waste any time. Shall we discuss Finding and Losing?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've listened to Finding and Losing and Backyard Bear a number of times over the last few days. Very happy that the Nug stream has been available for rewatch. So there is a soundboard to go back to, which has been very nice. I mean, yeah, coming out for set two and just dropping these two jams back to back. Like, I obviously the soundboards aren't out. I know they're both over 20 minutes. What are the exact times here?
Great question. They're in the vicinity of 24 minutes, and we get 24 minute back-to-back jams here.
Yeah.
Not to get ahead of ourselves.
It's always a treat when any band plays two jams that long back-to-back. And, you know, seeing what they've been doing recently, you know, again, that Nectar's Night One show where I think there's like three or four jams that cross 20 minutes. So when they're coming out for set two and they're throwing down these jams, and not only are they of that length, but the quality that you're getting immediately. And that's what struck me as soon as the Finding and Losing jam began. You know, first of all, great song. But this jam to me is all about delay work, kind of from everybody. There's like synths and delay here. Really, Jake is really leaning into the delay for a lot of this jam. And I thought that was really, really cool, the way that he utilized it to kind of, again, be in that group mindset, because the delay that he was doing was very like hypnotic patterns based instead of like delay leads, which he could, you know, also use that for. But it was really, really, really cool the way he utilized that.
Yeah, and I think the sonic space that they're getting into now, as he's using some of these delay effects, it's like there's Jake, there's Jake's effects, there's Donnie, and the back and forth super
yep.
early in the jam around 6:45. It's hard to tell exactly who's doing what, and there are like echoes on
Yeah.
echoes, and it's just a chaotic vibe, but I'm really there for it. I contrast that with the fact that a few minutes after that, Alex, who is just, you know, the king of groove
Yep.
and is just such a stud, his drumming around 8 minutes is kind of keeping everything housed together. He's like the skeleton that's keeping the whole thing in one piece. But really nice synth washes from Donnie, and some of his effects are also like, wait, what's that? Who's playing that?
Yeah.
But kind of pushing sonic boundaries as the jam begins. We use some effects to move into new territory, and you talked about this in your write-up, Mike, and like his sludgy, what kind of like synth,
oh, the synth
pedal.
Yeah.
I think of them as like laser beams, or sometimes like more of a meatball vibe, but sludgy laser beams from Mike, and everyone I think will know what we're talking about right around 10:30 or so.
It's really, really cool the way that they get into this darker territory, you know, thanks to that synths and all the delays. And again, yeah, Jake and Donnie both adding these very similar tones. And it's cool the way that, you know, sometimes in a band, in an improvisational, you know, band, if there are two members in a very similar sonic space, it can get kind of muddy, or, you know, like, you won't be able to tell who's playing what in a bad way. But this is, they're in a similar sonic space, delay, you know, textural stuff, and it sounds great, because it's what, when you have all four of these guys playing like this, it's like incredible. You know, and also seeing, you know, improv at this high of a level, in a small room like this was just such a treat.
Yeah, it's so cool. And not only sonically, but also rhythmically, sometimes
yeah.
they'll do that. Like I noticed right around, I guess, like 11 minutes and 30 seconds, they are all kind of taking turns gathering around this stuttering beat. Like Alex does it,
mm-hmm.
and Jake does it, and Mike gets in on it, and Donnie is just playing keys underneath. But, you know, for a band to be listening that well, where it's not just call and response and mimicry, but like incorporating some of those rhythmic elements into their own thread that they're weaving. Thought it was great, and just the tones in the midsection of this jam
yeah.
were kind of really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you go from this darkness and this very like churny kind of thing with all the delay, thanks to really like Donnie moves over to organ, and I love his organ work. I love the way it's used in this jam. I went back and I listened to this in Backyard Bear again this morning, a little bit of prep. But yeah, I love the peak that they hit, and the way they return to the song at the end. Just like really great conclusion. And again, these guys are so fluid, moving between ideas and moving back into the end of the song. Like it's amazing.
Backyard Bear, I think I texted you and said, "Ooh, Backyard Bear, early set two. This is usually an early set one kind of a situation. Wonder what's going to happen." I still haven't researched how many Backyard Bears have gone deep. I'm not sure how I would do that other than looking at times on Nugs and on the Re-Listen app. I'm not sure if I'm that committed, but this is a big Backyard Bear and another 24
Feral
minute
bear,
jam.
we called it, I think.
A feral bear. Yeah, what did you think of this? How was this hitting the crowd?
This is my highlight of the show, and the weekend from a musical standpoint. This was amazing. You texted me midway through like, this is the GOAT Backyard Bear, and I was like, nice, nice. Like I l love a good hasty rank.
I should probably research that to make sure I'm not speaking out of turn, but if it's not, I'd like to hear what's in
I'm
competition.
sorry that I exposed your hasty rank like that.
I'm pretty confident.
But it was incredible. The first half of the jam is great. More full band interplay, just really, really cool stuff. But it's after that first peak when they get into this dark zone is when it really was like, oh my God, for me. It's really the cool part about it is you have Alex and Mike locking in on this like thumpy groove, and Mike is like slapping very steadily, very steady from them. And then what Jake and Donnie are doing, they're just like in outer space. And what Donnie's doing on his mini Moog synth is crazy to me. Like I loved watching him, play with all the knobs and, change stuff around as it was happening. And then, Jake goes to that mood pedal that I'm sure, it's talked about a lot.
Been discussed the Chase
Yes.
Bliss mood, although
Yes.
it's the trend that we're seeing with that this year is that it's much more nuanced and subtle, and unlike last year as it was being introduced and it would often be sort of a solo element, you've really got to listen and make sure you've got some active ears to hear it. But yeah, Jake does a great job with that, and it is pretty subtle. This I wrote in my notes could be the soundtrack for like some kind of Sonic Death March. That's how moody and sort of rooted.
Moody.
Oh, hey, Chase Bliss moody it is. Patient, especially Mike and Alex, like talk about a band that's never, not slow, but never in a rush to necessarily go somewhere. Want to
Very
make
big
sure,
difference.
Yeah, there. I was just thinking, it will be interesting at some point in the future to hear that aspect of Iggy's jamming
Sure.
kind of develop. But one of the benefits of kind of this march is that things really are open for listening and for collaboration, and that's kind of exactly how we get it. We also, after that dark, moody section, get a nice sort of rapping jam that comes from Jake playing these longing, sort of slow licks. It sort of corrals things melodically after 18 minutes, and it gets a little peaky. In Backyard Bear, it's like this, the jam is peaking. That is the vocal re-entry point to sing the last chorus, and it's like such a cool effect. I thought so
Yeah.
anyway, a fun way to wrap the song.
And then there's another, I guess the bit of the end of Finding and Losing that they forgot earlier, which I didn't realize what was happening. And I don't think Brownie did either, because he came on stage at the end of Backyard Bear. Then they started playing the little bit of Finding and Losing, and he was like kind of stood there like confused for a second, and then just kind of like went back over by the stairs and like sat down, which I thought was really funny to watch from the audience.
Little finding and losing, yeah. 1 minute, 1 minute add-on before we get into Let It Rock with Brownie. And I've heard actually from Nectars, now that I think about it, earlier this year, the Brownstein family band
Yes.
with Mark on bass and Jake on guitar and Mark's son on drums and Donnie, unofficially a Brownstein, obviously on keys. But what I heard from that
Batotstein.
earlier, Batotsky. That sounds, yeah.
Batotstein.
Ah, Batotsky, that makes sense.
It's not actually his name.
I know, but.
That's just what Brownie calls him. For anyone listening who may have been curious.
Right, who's as confused as I am? But what I heard sounded great. And Brownstein, oof, I mean, he was fantastic in this Let It Rock, which I have to
Yeah.
give a quick shout out to my episode 3 guest, Brian, another Eggy pal that I talk with about this stuff often. But he was saying, oh, yeah, they do this way more in the Jerry Garcia Band sort of mode of Let It Rock as opposed to the Chuck Berry. I had never considered that, but obviously that is totally true. So shout out to Brian for that. But I was trying to decide, Ryan, if Mark is playing like Mike, or if Mike maybe is just playing like Mark, because he's able to sort of like live in that Mike space, say that 5 times fast,
Yeah.
pretty well as this jam develops, because it like starts to get out there, but it's always rooted by the bass all the while.
Yeah, and it was funny. Obviously, I don't know Disco Biscuits songs very well, but it was funny finding out later that there were teases of multiple Disco Biscuits songs in this, which is hilarious because I know obviously Brownie, Jake, and Donnie have played together at only one show, but I'm sure that there were a bunch of rehearsals, and so they know how to play with each other, and like Eggy has opened for the Biscuits before, and Brownie is his finger on the pulse. Like, he knows what's going on and he's listening to things, and so I think he's heard enough of Alex's drumming that he knows where he can fit in. I think Brownie's a very intelligent kind of bass player who will always, if he's sitting in with someone and he knows them at least, like, if he has time to prep, he'll figure out where he can fit in, and how he kind of has to play. He's obviously not going to play the same as, when he plays in the Disco Biscuits, because that's a completely different role, completely different kind of drummer. But yeah, it was amazing to hear how well he fit in with them immediately, and they were all having a blast on stage, which was really cool. And then I was even more excited when he announced, you know, it obviously it hasn't been officially announced yet, but he told the crowd after the song ended that on June 27th, the Brownstein Family Band will be playing at the Ardmore Music Hall. And I was excited because Goose is playing at The Man in Philly on June 28th. And so, you know, night zero plans. And
that's amazing.
I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to be very exciting. And I would imagine packed. What is the capacity at Ardmore?
Around 500, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there'll be a lot of night zero folks in there ready to have a good time.
Yes.
Well, as far as Let It Rock is concerned, I did want to shout out that Clav is out front early on, just because are the Clav tweet master. I'm looking at
there were a number of Clav tweets.
Yes. Yeah. But I like the angular kind of minor key tinge early in this jam. And you had mentioned Donnie and his great organ work. He's doing it here as well. So, yeah, it was a nice little jam. Great sit in. I did want to mention that the end of this song gets into, I'm not sure if this was pre-practiced, but some peaky bass and a nice upbeat guitar riff. Very like radio-friendly, indie rock sort of a melody that gets going for a couple of minutes late in this jam. I just thought it was fantastic. Hey there, it's Justin. I'm editing this podcast episode and just realized that everyone is playing Home Again, which was a great, great track on the 2001 Disco Biscuits album, They Missed the Perfume. Back in the day, I love this album and I especially love this track. It definitely has a Raleigh Tweezer 121699 vibe about it, but I just wanted to edit that in. So you didn't think I was dumb. All right, back to the pod. What did you think about Ricky Gervais as a set closer here?
I loved it. I'd heard this song a couple of times before. Just like great song. You know, another good like shorter jam, but, you know, great energy to close out the set. And you could tell like after those two huge jams and the Brownie sit-in, like, you know, they were playing with house money. The crowd was totally locked in, so happy. The band was clearly so happy. And again, it's that I said to you before the show, it's like it's the night before energy. And you have this with, you know, Phish too on like December 30th, October 30th, whatever, the night before the big event show, which was obviously for Eggy, it was Purim. And so it's like, you know, putting it all out there, like letting off your steam, you know, whether it's like nerves or anything like that. It's like you're going to go out there and you're going to, you know, play a hell of a show. And they did.
Yeah.
And it was great.
A la Phish in Spartanburg, South Carolina on October 29th, 1994.
Exactly.
Before the White Album in upstate New York 2 days later. Love the Night Zero energy. And yeah, playing with house money and definitely in the black by the end of set two. I did want to acknowledge that Donnie has this synth effect that has like a vocal quality to it. A vocoder, I don't know.
Yes, yeah, it's the
so
vocoder.
That happens here around 5 minutes, and then it reappears the next night in the Mr. Blue Sky Electric Light Orchestra cover, which is something that we'll talk about. So connecting these dots as you listen night to night was kind of a fun thing for me to do. I want to shout out Alex as Jake is soaring atop his funky groove. Alex sounds like he is two drummers and not one drummer during his fill around the 9 minute mark of Ricky Gervais. Yeah. So yeah. Beast, just a beast.
He sounds like two drummers a lot.
Yes. Yeah. It's very impressive. How did you take the train from Philly up to Brooklyn? How does one travel between shows?
Had a good friend, shout out to Josh, who lives in outside Philly, in the suburbs. And so took the train down to him from Brooklyn on Friday. And then he drove us back up in the monsoon on Saturday.
Ah.
A lot of rain. As as a meteorologist, you'll appreciate that.
I do appreciate that. Do I always pay attention to the weather on the other end of the country?
No.
Not always. So let's talk about Purim. We sort of had inklings with the theme, reeling in the years, and the encouragement to dress up in costume. This seemed like it was going to be a party show, maybe a lot of covers, and that's what we ended up getting. What were you anticipating as you headed into Purim, other than being glad to be out of the rain in Brooklyn?
Yeah, well, luckily by showtime, the rain had stopped. But I was looking forward to the show. You know, I knew it was going to be two sets. I knew the Funky Dogs were going to be incorporated in some way. Didn't really know what the reeling in the years thing was going to take. You know, was it going to be across the whole show? Was it just going to be one set? I was just excited, and seeing lots of good friends. It just had an amazing vibe in there. The place was absolutely packed, wall to wall. And again, just so many friends were there in Brooklyn. As a Jewish person, I was so excited the fact that I was seeing Aggie play a Purim show, which is awesome. And it was awesome. Next year they do it again. I hope there's a Megillah reading or a couple of Purim songs. For those who don't know, the Megillah is a Purim. It's like the Purim prayer book thing. But, just for the holiday.
Yeah. Why not go all in? And I think you were telling me, or I was Wikipediaing it after we talked about it, but this story is told thousands of years ago, the Jewish people avoiding enslavement, but it's read in the book of
avoiding
Esther?
Getting killed off.
Ah, okay.
It's the Book of Esther, because Queen Esther was who saved us from the evil Haman in Persia, in ancient Persia.
All right.
Little Purim history for you. As Donnie said in the interview with RJ at Ardmore, they tried to kill us. It didn't work. And we celebrate because of that.
I love it.
As many people were doing, and I was, letting people know on Saturday, one of the things you're supposed to do, according to the Talmud, which is another Jewish book, you're supposed to drink on Purim until you can't tell the difference between Haman and Mordechai, who's the villain and one of the heroes of the story. So I hope everybody did. I certainly did.
Say your mom may at some point in the future listen to this podcast.
She knows.
We're appropriate. But party set two. I thought, though, that it was exceptionally enjoyable. Before we get to set two, I want to shout out the Zug Swang. I thought it was phenomenal, kind of type 1.5 jam early in set one. Mm-hmm. The Woos that are quite palpable on the audience recording, this is from Bootsy Jacobs, are a testament to the intensity of what is going on there, and everyone, especially around 9 minutes, it's just one of those perfect, like, this isn't an overly complex jam, type 1.5, but it is just raging along. Everyone's playing at 100%, and it just all melds together perfectly. And then we get another Atomic Age. Rare, we're getting back-to-back Atomic Ages here. I think it was
played... Is this
played
4 shows in a row now?
4 out of 5 shows since Nectar's debut, which was night 2. I think maybe they missed out on it in Portland. But yeah, in D.C., it's like 20 minutes. In Ardmore, here in Brooklyn. So fantastic stuff. And another great rendition. Anything else jump out at you from set one, sir?
No, I was excited to hear Atomic Age again. Otherwise, you know, I had heard Shadow before, but the other songs were new and, you know, very enjoyable. I wasn't expecting any big jams at this show, you know, given the holiday party nature of it. But, you know, going to set break, you know, when they hadn't come out in costumes or any of the whole thing for the first set, it was like, okay, they're going to come out after set break and it's going to be awesome.
And indeed, I'm sure it was awesome because they get right into it. Boom, we're into the Rolling Stones, Jumpin' Jack Flash. And I was, as I was listening, sort of looking up, when was this released? Wanted to see if there was any sort of like narrative or pathway. I don't think there was, but we get a late 60s Rolling Stones song, which I thought was nice. But for me, the next song, Tomorrow Never Knows, was one of the highlights of the 100%. Set. Like some of the Eastern tinged metallic synths that I know I've talked about on this podcast from Donnie are just perfect. They're just perfect for this song. You know, the Beatles in their like Indian kind of raga, John Lennon sort of mode, and I thought they nailed it. What did you think, and how was the room? Because this is kind of, you know, this is not like a beer drinking song. I feel like this is sort of an intense exploration.
Jumpin' Jack Flash, people were going nuts for, which was great. You know, Mike crushed the vocals on it. Tomorrow Never Knows was really amazing. You know, this is a pretty commonly covered song by a lot of jam bands, and this was the first time Eggy did it. And I thought they, you know, they destroyed it. Really, Alex is the star to me here. He's all over the kit. He's hitting that, you know, that tom hit, that double tom hit, that signature beat to the song. Absolutely crushed. I loved that they took it out for a bit of a walk. You know, it could have been a shorter version. Nobody would have said boo, you know, just like play the song and, you know, move on to Mr. Blue Sky. But no, they just like really took it out, played with the textures. And you mentioned Donnie, especially various synths, the Moog and the Virus. Amazing, amazing work.
Yeah, it was like flirting with cacophony around 9 minutes, but kept true to the form, as you alluded to, didn't get that far out there. I love the next song, Mr. Blue Sky. I have to admit, my love of this song just comes from Craig Ferguson's Late Late Show on CBS. This was like his theme music, so it was just around late at night on television, but great tune. And as we hinted at the vocoder effects that Donnie was trying out, the night prior, come back here, kind of a really cool effect. could see Mr. Blue Sky becoming a part of the repertoire for Eggy. It's just kind of a unique enough choice and a bouncy and fun enough choice that of, I think, these songs, maybe this one would be the most likely to be busted out, kind of in a utility type role, nothing
Sure.
beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, they picked their covers very, very well. They all suit the band, and it was great. But I was excited about Sweaters for Straw Men. Big fan of this song. First of all, after you get a run of covers, the Funky Dogs come out and they immediately do an original as the first song with horns. That was great. And one that I knew, which was also very
Right.
exciting.
One of my favorite Eggy songs, just so many clever lyrical turn of phrases there.
Yeah.
And I thought that the horns, just built the song up, kind of broadened it, filled it out, brightened it even more. It's already got hooks, and the horns just, kind of emphasize that even
Yeah.
more.
You can tell how well practiced they were with the horns, and also they had the experience playing with the Funky Dogs already. At least Tommy Weeks from the Funky Dogs played with Eggy and Sammy Garrett at good friend Micah and Michael's wedding in
Oh,
February.
nice.
That was their wedding band, which is a hell of a wedding band.
Can you,
Yes.
guy with his pulse on the Goose world and the Eggy world, explain the behind the scene friendships going on between the two bands and who?
I mean, they came up in Connecticut together, and they've played together a bunch. And Eggy was the opener at a couple of Goosemases and various Goose shows. But obviously, they haven't played together since 2019. Since Goose kind of took off. But obviously, Ben, who's obviously no longer the drummer of Goose,
Right.
is Micah's brother, and so helped facilitate that for their wedding, which was a blast.
That sounds like a blast. I
Yeah.
remember you sending me a text saying, I'm at this wedding reception and Eggy is the
Yeah, it's
band. I was like,
Eggy. Yeah.
what?
The only complaint I have about the Purim show is that they didn't play Sussudio. They played it at the wedding, so I'm happy I've seen it. But like I really wanted the Sussudio.
It
That's
would have been
probably
great with horns.
one of my favorite Eggy covers. No real complaints about this show.
No, we loved everything. I did think, speaking of Sammy Garrett, I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross. That was lovely. I have to say, next song, Laurel, that's a new song. I need to hear a crisp soundboard version and really sink my ears into it. I'm
Yeah.
excited for the album to come out so I can spend some time with the studio versions of some of these songs. But it's bouncy, it's catchy, it's upbeat. The horns complement Laurel quite well. I'm just still kind of waiting for it to fully gel. I did not need any sort of encouragement to instantly fall in love with Subterranean, Homesick, Alien. Ryan, this album came out, OK Computer, in 1997. I was going to be a junior in high school. This was also the summer that I had a CDR burner, got a copy of A Live One by the band Phish, which you may or may not know. So summer 97, I pivoted from radio fandom to Phish fandom. Did both simultaneously. It's not an either or world. But when they started playing this cover, me and all the other 40 something year olds who were listening got really excited. How did you feel about it?
I loved it. As somebody who, if anyone knows me, I only listen to jam bands. So I hadn't heard the song before, but I really enjoyed it here. And again, just another example of an ambitious cover that, sorry, I've learned that it's an ambitious cover, You know, they crushed it, and the horns sounded amazing.
Yeah, they really did. Alex killed the Thom Yorke vocals. I thought the textures that the horns and Jake and Donnie and his synths were all bringing together were just really complimentary, and it just built and built and built. And some of those mini waves of peaks between like 9 minutes and 11 minutes were just fantastic, especially the Alex drum fills in between. Probably my favorite cover and favorite highlight of the whole evening, of the whole affair. The Golden Gate Dancer, Eggy original, I thought was great, especially with
Yeah.
the horns.
And I loved that they said after the song, after you know, at the end of the set, Donnie said that the last time they played Golden Gate Dancer with horns was when he and Jake were in high school. He was like, very different than this,
Right.
which was great.
Back in the early 2010s, I'm assuming. So yeah, I've come a long way. And then of course we get the title song of the evening, Reeling in the
Oh,
Years, with
we can't skip over the Pete Shapiro speech. That's like a pivotal moment of
okay, you've
this
got
whole
some
show.
notes. You've got I hope you have time
No,
stamps.
it was just funny. You know, he was very excited. And I said to one of my friends who was next to me, as he was talking, I was like, oh, I guess Eggie's an industry plant now. You know,
Excellent.
now that they have the Shapiro endorsement.
Right. Someone's a little sensitive from hearing those critiques in his
Oh no, it
goose
was, I
world.
meant it in a funny way.
I know, I'm just playing. I wasn't hating the streams on Nugs.
It was a good speech.
Yeah. Reeling in the ears. Sammy Garrett comes
Yes.
back out. It's great. Love the Dan. Certainly with Green Earrings, which they covered with your boy Corey Wong on Jam Cruise recently. Yeah, the
That was
Dan
sick.
is right up Eggy's Sonic Alley. And then Smile and Eggy Original, which also they know what they're doing. It's another song that's already bright and kind of upbeat, and the horns just complemented that very, very well. So I would imagine, since you were you at this point in time unable to tell the difference between,
Yes, I got there.
okay.
I got there by set break actually, because the show started kind of late.
Yeah, fair.
But it, Reelin' in the Ears was awesome. I thought Jake absolutely nailed the guitar part, you know, the solo. And I love that they, you know, they had Sammy Garrett up there not to sing lead, but to add, you know, backing vocals to it, which I thought was great. But yeah, they nailed it. Everybody was happy, you know, the band thanked them, you know, happy Purim. And by them, I mean us. I was there. But yeah, it was just all around an amazing end to the night and an amazing night.
Yeah, and your first two-set Eggy shows, back-to-back nights here, I would say
Big
were a
success.
smashing success. Yeah, you got the yin yang of deep jams and party vibes, so it was pretty perfect. Do you have any Eggy plans in the future?
They're coming to Toronto.
Oh
In May,
yeah, tight.
which like 6 weeks from now, May 8th, they're playing in Toronto, which I cannot wait for. You know, no, nobody comes up here. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing Eggie where I live.
Yeah, same.
Very exciting. Getting to sleep in my own bed after a show, which I never get to do.
It'll be magical. I'm excited. Eggie's coming out where I live in Las Vegas. They're playing 9 dates in April across the country. I wish they were playing 9 dates in Las Vegas in
Yeah,
April.
that would be good residency for you.
It would be great. And then 6 dates in May, including up in Toronto. Often I make predictions or talk about what I'm hoping for in the upcoming block of Eggie shows. I just hope we get similar amounts of highlights, just because the last handful of shows have been littered with can't miss highlights, things that you see people talking about and kind of spazzing out over on social media and just text threads with friends. So I hope the next, block of shows is as productive. I want to give folks a parting shot jam. The May 7th, 2023 Nashville Night 2 Finding and Losing is phenomenal. It's got great bass groove, it's peppy, and there are Phish Teases galore, Chalk Dust Torture, Stash, Landlady, all in there. But I mentioned that jam because on one of our next episodes, young Ryan, I'm gonna hang out with Brian Brinkman, our other
Ooh.
buddy, and we're gonna talk about 10 Eggie shows from late April through May of 2023. Brian described these as the last group of great shows before everyone got on the Eggie train last summer and last fall. So that's going to be an upcoming episode. Look out for that. Also, I am recording tomorrow an episode with Al W, who was my guest on our inaugural episode. He was at the Nectar shows and he taped them. So we'll talk to Al about Nectar's night one and two. I will try to edit as quickly as I can and get these out to the public. But great Eggie jams definitely necessitated some emergency vice or virtue podcast. So thanks for being a guest.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to have, been able to watch as you got this podcast started and, all this excitement. And I'm very happy I was able to come on. And I hope you'll have me on again in the future.
Yeah, man. Hopefully there are some deep Toronto jams. We'll have some.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, exactly. Well, as you know, the end of the podcast routine, subscribe, leave a review, tell a friend about Vice or Virtue and Eggie Pod. I'm on Instagram. Just look for Vice or Virtue. You can find me on Mastodon if you're geeky. I'm Justin Bruce on Shakedown Social. And you can always email Vice or Virtue and Eggie Pod at gmail.com. But thanks to everyone for listening, and hopefully you enjoyed discussions about these great jams. Have a good one.
You're all